and welcome to this week's edition of the Video News Endscreen Media Podcast. This is Will Richmond from Video News, and Colin Dixon from Endscreen Media is with me. Hi there, Colin.
Hey, Will. I'm back in the US on a very solid network connection this time. So we had a little bit of problems last week with our great interview with Bruce Leichman. And a discussion of call cutting, which I don't know about. I hope our viewers enjoyed as much as I did, listeners rather. So we have a bunch of stories we want to cover this week, right? We're going to do an omnibus of stories.
Yeah, so we're going to cover four different items that caught our attention this week, and we'll go back and forth on these. And you are going to get us started talking about Viacom and their idea of anchoring an entertainment-only skinny bundle.
Yeah, this was an announcement by Bob Bakish, who is CEO of Viacom. And he's the new CEO. He was brought in late last year. Viacom, I think it's pretty well known, has really been struggling with audience and with revenue for quite a while. And so he's been looking at ways to improve things. And it looks like one of the ways that he thinks he can improve the situation for Viacom is by working with pay TV operators to create a skinny bundle that's only pay, that's on pay TV. This is not an online thing, but basically the idea here is, he says, is to omit sports and news. And he says that that will be a very exciting development in the marketplace and is a very positive development for Viacom. So now $20 is a tough price point to meet, but boy, if he does drop news and sports, that probably gives him the best shot at it. Because as we've talked about in the past, sports really does drive up the price of pay television. And to give you an idea of just how much, I love this site, whatyoupayforsports.com. They've got lots of great detail and information on how much you're actually spending. So I basically went in there and I looked at, well, what if I had ESPN 1 and 2, Fox Sports 1 and 2, TNT, TBS, NBC and CBS Sports. And most pay TV subscribers have those. Okay, so how much are they costing me? Well, in license fees, that's $13 a month. So $13 a month from what you pay monthly goes directly to those channels. So if you're not providing those channels, although I don't know if you can just drop TNT and TBS, but if you're not providing those channels, you automatically get a $13 reduction in the license fees that you're paying. So I imagine if you really cleaned out all of the sports and all of the news channels, that you would get a lot of headroom, and maybe you can make that $20 price point that Viacom is looking to hit. But the next big question is, okay, great, so you can make that price point, but is Viacom really a good option to anchor a skinny bundle? Now, sure, you know, Viacom has some interesting channels, and those channels tend to skew younger. So, of course, they've got MTV and they've got Comedy Central, BET, Nickelodeon, Nick Jr., Paramount, etc. So, and as I say, a lot of those really do skew younger. But the problem for them is that the audience for those channels have been plummeting. So MTV's audience has dropped 50% since 2011 in the 18 to 49-year-olds. Which is a huge drop, and the entire TV lineup saw revenue drop 3% in the second quarter of 2016 alone. So one of the things Mr. Bakish has done with the company is he says he's focusing around those six key brands that I mentioned. But you know, I just don't think that Viacom, these six channels, really are going to work as the anchor of an entire skinny bundle. I mean, the people he's chasing, Will, are the young. They're the ones that are spending the most time online with, as we'll get to in a moment, with social video, for example. And I'm just Viacom is already doing a lot on YouTube and Facebook to try and attract back those viewers there. So I got a feeling that even at $20, if this package is really anchored by the Viacom channels, that it's just not going to be enough to get those young people, those millennials, to come back and subscribe to pay television and put up with, you know, the long tie-ins of a year or 2 years and a set-top box and all of that paraphernalia. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think the concept of an entertainment-only skinny bundle makes some sense, but the idea of Viacom anchoring it, for all the reasons you said, seems like a stretch. So definitely a development worth keeping an eye on. I know Discovery's CEO has been out talking about the idea of an entertainment-only skinny bundle as well. So it does seem like there's some momentum for it in the market. But as you said, they're targeting the same market that we're seeing companies like Facebook and Snapchat and YouTube go after pretty hard. And that sort of leads us into our second segment today, right?
It sure does. And so you're gonna talk about some announcements by Facebook about premium video offering through the video, that video platform.
Yeah, so not so much announcements, but at least news that leaked this week from Reuters saying that Facebook has signed deals with Vox Media, BuzzFeed, and Group 9 Media, among others, to make shows specifically for Facebook's video service. Now, the fact that Facebook wants to pursue longer form video is no surprise. What has been under wraps, though, is what their plan for doing that actually was going to be. So with these reported deals, we see kind of the first outline of who Facebook is going to be working with. And, you know, no surprise, all those companies have big millennial followings. They also all are very active with Facebook already. Reuters reported that Facebook has two types of deals that it's pursuing for episodes that are 20 to 30 minutes, which it would own. They're paying up to $250,000 per episode. And for shorter episodes, 5 to 10 minutes, they're paying $10,000 to $35,000 and then offering 55% of the ad revenue to partners. Interesting, when I was at the Recode conference in earlier this year in February, the Facebook executive on stage there said that Dan Rose said that they really didn't want to do anything other than an ad rev share. So this might be a departure from that, depending on how accurate the Reuters report is. But there's no question Facebook wants to be in the video business. They're launching this thing. They've launched this thing called Video Tab, which is meant to be sort of the destination spot within the app. They've also now launched the connected TV apps. They want to, they have a vision of people kind of sitting back and watching video from their couches. Very different way to use Facebook than we've seen with the news feed model. So it remains to be seen how this all unfolds. But allegedly, we're going to see these new shows starting to come out later this summer.
And I think they said that some of these are going to be actually quite long, Will, in the sort of 20 minute range, something like that.
20 to 30 minutes are the longer form.
So, you know, this actually makes a lot of sense. I totally believe this rumor because, you know, one of the things that I've been watching pretty closely is how much the advertising is going up in value for Facebook, particularly in the video sphere. And I grabbed some really interesting and data from a company called Ampere Analysis, which is based in the UK. And they looked at Facebook advertising ARPU, and it's really catching up to TV, Will. In North America, it is now 40% of the TV ARPU, up from 7% in 2012. And in Europe, it's 53% of TV ARPU. So it totally makes sense for Facebook to be pushing in this direction and continue to increase the value of those ads. But, you know, doing the longer form means that they get to show more of the ads during the show. So, you know, engagement is everything, and they're doing everything right now to really transition into a force on TV as well as on our mobile devices. So totally believe that those rumors, Will.
Yeah, and if they want to keep growing revenue at 50% quarter over quarter, they certainly need to start tapping into some of the TV ad dollars as well. So we'll keep a close eye on Facebook, Colin. Let's move on to our third topic that caught our attention this week, and that was Amazon bringing channels over to Europe for the first time.
So we've talked a lot about Amazon channels, I think, on the podcast, Will, and I think both of us are sort of very bullish on this approach. We really like the aggregation of SVOD services that Amazon is doing inside of channels here in the US. And apparently it's really working for the SVOD providers. I've been hearing lots of reports that it's really working in marketing SVOD channels to consumers, that people are actually signing up for some of these lesser known SVOD channels, solving some really big problems for some of these channels. Well, anyway, they're bringing this approach now to Europe. They've actually released it in three countries, in the UK, Germany, and Austria. And in fact, in Germany, Amazon is more popular than Netflix. It's the only country I can think of where that's actually the case. Amazon Video, of course. I'm not talking about the real retail side. And they've got a few less channels there. I think they're providing about 40 channels in that bucket of channels that people can sign up for through Amazon in the UK, Germany, and Austria. But the interesting thing here is that they've gotten a couple of channels that previously have only been available with a pay TV subscription in those countries, and they've gotten them to partner with Amazon and be available basically a la carte, where you can just sign up for individual channels. I mentioned one, Discovery. This is the first time Discovery has been available outside of a pay TV subscription. It'll cost you £4.99 a month, which is around about $6 or $6.50 a month. And they also have Live. This was also a big change. They haven't done this yet here, but you can actually get live TV channels. So, for example, you can get Eurosport Player for £6.99 a month, about $8.50 a month, and that's a live channel showing live sports. So, you know, this is the first time outside of a pay TV subscription, and this has led to lots of speculation in Europe that this is a real direct attack on pay television. And the interesting thing about that market, of course, is that the pay TV is typically not as penetrated there as it is in the US, for the simple reason that there is a very rich variety of free-to-air channels available in the UK, Germany, and Austria. For example, I think you can get through Freeview, which is their free-to-air service, you can get probably 30 or 40 really interesting channels pretty much everywhere. So what this tells me is that, you know, this actually could be a threat now to pay television, because rather than having to go to pay television to get channels like Discovery and Eurosport, you can now get them directly from Amazon on an a la carte basis. And yes, if you were to try and put together a pay TV-like subscription with channels, you'd end up probably paying a lot more. But I don't think that's the way people are going to use it. I think they're going to use it to top up on their free-to-air and only pull in the channels that they really want. So again, I think this is a very strong play from Amazon, and I think it's going to probably play pretty well in those European countries. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree with you. I'm certainly bullish on Amazon channels, as you mentioned at the beginning, have been since the beginning. And we've seen, companies like HBO, Starz, Showtime, others singing the praises of the Amazon channels model here in the U.S. So if they can have the same type of success over in Europe, then that bodes for, I think, even further expansion of channels, right?
Yeah, I really do think it does, Will. And listen, I mean, the variety of channels they have available is pretty impressive. So they've got Shudder, they've got Horse and Country Play. I mean, you wouldn't see a channel like that here, right? But they've got MGM, Motorvision, and even Comic-Con HQ is available through this service. So it's really, there is a very large variety of channels there, and boy, there's a lot to watch. If you don't want to do pay television, you can just do a few of these channels and switch them out as you like. So I'm pretty bullish on it. But we had one more social platform that we wanted to talk about, and that's Snapchat. So they had some interesting announcements this week as well, Will, right?
Yeah, so actually, this was a good article that was in Variety this week. And it's, again, no surprise, no news that Snapchat is going after the video space pretty hard. But Variety did a really nice report on all the different media partners that Snapchat now has involved in creating what are called Snapchat shows. And just the partial list includes Jimmy Fallon, James Corden, Conan, NBC News, Discovery, E, A&E Networks, and others. It seems like the enthusiasm from these media partners to work with Snapchat is based in part on the success that Snapchat has had with its own show, a show called Good Luck America, which Snapchat revealed to Variety now averages 5.2 million viewers per episode in its second season to date. And that's up 53% over an audience over its first season. So that's pretty robust, no question. And Snapchat certainly has a very large base of users, younger users, actually even younger than millennial. And this kind of brings us back to the topic of whether Viacom is viable and what they're talking about doing with the entertainment only skinny bundle. Also, I think is relevant to what Facebook is doing. Those two companies obviously have been very competitive with one another, including with Instagram. And so now thinking about all the originals that are coming to Facebook and to Snapchat just brings to mind, Colin, an article that I wrote a couple of weeks ago about a world awash in video. And it really does seem like these social platforms are going to be contributing a lot of original video to the world very soon.
Yeah, I absolutely will. In fact, I was looking at this the other day, and Snapchat now has 161 million daily users. That was Q4 2016, so it's probably a lot higher than that. And the interesting thing there is that a lot of folks are really they use Snapchat on a daily basis, particularly once again, younger people aged 13 to 24, for example. 44% in that age range are using it, and they said that they used Live Stories and or Discover, which is that video portal, pretty much on a daily basis. And some other data that showed up this morning, which I thought was equally interesting, was talking about how Gen Z, that's this 11 to 17 year old age group, they really use video the same way that other people, like, I guess us, use words, use the written word, the printed word. They read much less than they watch videos, and these short video clips really seem to be connecting with this age group. So, Snapchat's meteoric rise is pretty incredible. And the stir that Discover is making is also pretty incredible. The interesting thing here, though, Will, is that the business model for the content providers inside of Discover just keeps changing. And I know that earlier this year, last year, the way things worked was that they actually did a rev share on the advertising with the providers, but they actually changed. And they said that they don't want to do this anymore, and that they just want to play a flat license fee. Now, for the really popular channels, they didn't want to do this. So like Hearst, ESPN, Vice, for example, they really pushed back hard on Snapchat, and they got to keep the old deals. But for newer players and smaller players, they apparently are taking that deal, and Snapchat is true to its word, is making fairly large payments to them to license the content. But I guess the point here is that the models on Facebook and on Snapchat for premium content providers are still evolving pretty fast. And I think they're going to continue to change as they look to get the balance right between encouraging people onto the platform and them making money. And of course, Snapchat hasn't made any money yet, has it?
Yeah, I completely agree, Colin. I think these models are still very early stage. Even the usage models, the consumption model, is very early stage. So lots of experimentation going on right now, but clearly very deep-pocketed companies that have prioritized video strongly. So we're going to see them really, I think, sticking with their game plans as much as they can.
Yeah, I mean, gathering lots of attention from those premium content providers, because as we see with Viacom and with many others, they're really having trouble reaching them through traditional pay television and traditional TV platforms. So the only way you're going to find them is, it looks like, through places like Facebook and Snapchat Discover.
Absolutely. So I think that's all we have for this week, Colin. Pretty good rundown. Some pretty interesting developments throughout the industry that we're going to keep an eye on, and no doubt we'll have others to come as well.
You bet. It's an exciting time to be in the business.
It sure is. Okay, well, thanks, Colin. Thanks, everybody, for listening in on this week's edition of the Video News Endscreen Media Podcast. See you all again next week.